This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
It's Fun Friday. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and together with me on the show today is Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. I'm not saying that after MSP's 4-episode series on disruption that Matt feels that he needs to shake things up, but that would seem like a logical conclusion.
Well, it kind of is. You know, over the past few weeks, we've gone to some fairly dark places on the show, and I wanted to try and lift a little bit of that darkness today. I know you're laughing, to try and reassure everybody that life isn't completely hopeless and, you know, to try and highlight some of the great innovations and inventions and discoveries that have come out, not over the last few months or years, but literally over the last few weeks, because I want to show people that however bad things might appear to be, it's partly because we're only focusing on one part of the picture. You know, there is so much incredible stuff happening. And one of the stories we talked about last week on Geeks, I think you brought up, was NASA's intention to put the first female astronaut on the moon within the next, I think, 5 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really is a great time to be a human. Animal? Yeah, not so much.
All right, so where are we starting? I'm guessing it's going to be with Game of Thrones, just like every episode over the past few weeks.
Nearly. Not with Game of Thrones, but with games in general. So I guess the same theory applies for shows like GOT. But games may be helping us to actually grow our appreciation of history. Report in The New Scientist talks about the accuracy that the makers of Assassin's Creed Odyssey have gone to accurately recreate the world of Athens in about 400 BC. So we know with a lot of movies and TV shows that are based in these kind of ancient times or these, you know, these period dramas, often more attention is paid to the plot devices than to the accuracy of geography or the actual surroundings. But with games, you don't have the same time impediments, especially with these kind of sprawling worlds of so many of today's network titles. And as we've seen, you know, the physics engines and the replication of surroundings in all manner of games, this attention to detail is effectively creating these simulations of worlds of kind of bygone eras.
Couldn't you just, I don't know, read a book?
Well, of course you could, or you could go to a museum and look at their exhibits, or, you know, you could actually go and visit some of these places. Most of us have some artifacts of antiquity hanging around where we live, possibly even in our own homes, talking to us. There is a reason that the tech is called virtual reality. So if you're going to play games, why not immerse yourself in all these fantastic landscapes that actually bring the history to life? Because learning isn't just about absorbing facts in textbooks. It's also about that experience. And what better way to explore, I don't know, ancient Rome or Greece or Victorian London than to walk its streets with, you know, some kind of sense of purpose or even a mission. And, you know, as we've said about games before, once you get bored exploring, then you can just start creating mayhem.
Yeah, I love that. Now, I think we're sticking with the superpowers for the next story.
Yeah, or an invention that pretty much gives us a superpower, and that's the power to see round corners, just like Superman and his laser X-ray, I don't know, whatever it was, vision. In theory, this isn't something that's actually that new. You know, we've been able to use imaging algorithms with video images for quite a while to come up with an idea of an image of what things look like around a corner. And they've always required some very stringent conditions. So you have to have a kind of very plain background. You can't have much going on around the corner, which kind of defeats the point of detecting what's going on around the corner. It only works when there's nothing there.
And this is the theory of an accidental camera.
Yeah. The idea is you project patterns of light on the ground at the edge of the corner, and those patterns are able to detect at least part of what's happening around the edge that you can't see. What's changed here is that scientists at Boston University have developed a new algorithm that plugs in what is known as a plausible answer. Essentially, the algorithm is trying to anticipate and predict what is around the corner from the variables that it is able to control. So at the moment, these images are one-dimensional. It's kind of limited to lines and colors. But the Boston team is already working on imaging algorithms that will enable it to predict two and three-dimensional images in the not-too-distant future.
Isn't this just a fancy way of making one of those, you know, Facebook's 3D photo?
Yeah, but you know, not every development in technology has to link back to Facebook. You know, I can imagine it having a lot of security and military applications. Mm, the Boston team, I think, is anticipating that it will be incorporated into autonomous cars.
Clever.
And as we know from previous unfortunate accidents that these vehicles have had, unpredictable situations are not the things that they cope with very well. So this technology could be one more layer that enables those machines to operate with a much higher degree of safety in public areas.
I like this idea of superpowers. Are there more?
Superpowers, yes, there are a couple.
Well, I mean real superpowers.
I know that this is one that all of us have experienced. You know, you go into that hipster restaurant or cafe for your unicorn coffee and your dill-sprinkled avocado toast. Oh, yeah. The place looks fantastic. You know, it's all unfinished concrete floors and walls, marble-top tables and chairs. You know, you're laughing because you can conjure the place in your mind already.
I've seen so many of those.
Okay, and of course, nobody has given the first thought to how it's soundproofed. So even when it's two-thirds empty, it still sounds like the inside of a beehive and you have to shout to hear the person sitting across the table from you.
But that's not a superpower.
But the ability to focus on that single voice you want to hear is. A team at Columbia University in New York have come up with a device that actually reads your brain waves and figures out which voices in the herd to amplify and which to tune out, which is, yeah, that's so cool. It works on similar principles to the microphones that a lot of our digital assistants use, and those work by separating out multiple voices that are coming into a single microphone.
But don't those work by processing and then separating? That's not really useful in a conversation, no?
No, obviously. I mean, it would just be faster and more efficient to WhatsApp the person than wait for everything to be processed. But that's where the brainwaves come in. So in tests with volunteers, and honestly, this is where it does get a bit freaky. The researchers were able to tell which voices the volunteers were listening to by monitoring those brainwaves. So they can look at the brain pattern and figure out which voice you're trying to hear. It's still early days, but the team is working on a system that will allow a simple earpiece that will be able to analyze your brainwaves by contact with the skin. And a faster hybrid might be something that is more directional. That would be something we can get to a bit faster. So the user simply looks in the direction they want to listen to.
And this is for everyone?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I mean, some conditions like age-related loss of hearing, you can still actually hear fine, but you lose some of that fine-tuning, that granular ability. So, for example, you can't separate individual voices from background noise. You just hear this kind of bubble and babble of noise. That kind of solution, it works equally well for those with good hearing in noisy environments, you know, concerts, music festivals, or particularly raucous cocktail parties. At this point, I think that three simultaneous voices is the upper limit for the technology. But, you know, as with every pretty much any invention, you only have to wait a couple of months before versions 2, 3, and 4 actually hit the shelves.
All right, give us a wild card before we head into a break.
Well, I guess this kind of counts as a superpower. Have you ever wanted a sponge that sucks up uranium?
Yeah, thought about it many times during the day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those life mysteries.
Yeah, I can distinctly remember sitting in the bath as a child thinking, I wish this sponge could become a repository of radioactive materials.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I used words like repository as a child, and I had the correlating number of friendships that emerge as a result.
Yes.
But, you know, like the X-ray specs I bought from the back of a comic book, the sponges never did a thing, which is probably good news. You know, I might have been able to say repository, but like most eight-year-olds, I wasn't really trained in the proper handling of fissile material.
The questions I have to say on this show, but all of that could be about to change.
Well, yeah, you know, we've used natural sponges in the ocean, well, as sponges, but also as a tool for measuring the concentration of heavy metals in the water because they're sponges. They absorb stuff, so they're a great tool for us to use to assess the environment over time. Currently, we obtain most of the uranium for powering nuclear power plants by mining it from the ground, but there are significant trace amounts of uranium in seawater. Estimates of anywhere up to around 4.5 billion tons of uranium in the world's oceans. Mm. So researchers at Hainan University in China have developed a special melamine foam-based sponge. It's actually quite similar to the ones that we use for household cleaning. And they're then coated in chemicals that make these traces of uranium stick to them.
Don't we already have methods for seawater uranium extraction?
Yes, but Dong Wang, the lead researcher on the team, claims that this method is more environmentally friendly because the material is more biodegradable than the plastics that are currently used. And it's also a technology that can be used to clean up used nuclear waste at power plants. And as I said, they can be reused. Once the uranium has been extracted, you can chuck the sponge back in the ocean and it goes soak, soak, glow all over again. Obviously, it's still cheaper to mine uranium, but we have fairly small supplies in the ground. Mm. And there are lots of geopolitical concerns when it comes to who controls access to material like uranium.
So your idea of ending on a high note is to say that there's a new technology that allows people to obtain uranium as easily as taking a bath or swimming in the sea.
Well, obviously it's not that easy. you know, and it doesn't have to be processed in ways that create weapons-grade material. A lot of power plants we currently have are based on nuclear technologies that allow you to create plutonium as a military byproduct. But those are not the only nuclear technologies. And as we run out of oil and until renewables are as effective, I think we are going to see an upsurge in the adoption of nuclear power generation just as a bridge technology.
All right, we'll take a short break. And after the break, more superpowers, interplanetary visitations, and perhaps even an app or two. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Backing female ministers. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And we're back. It's MSP together with Matt Armitage from culturepop.com. And today is all about inventions and innovations to restore your faith in technology. So Matt, shall we stick with the environment a little longer?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's tricky to do stories about plastics, given the threat they pose to our world. And in our last story before the break, we were making the case that sponge-based technologies are a more sustainable way of gathering uranium than plastic-based technologies. So if you announce that plastics might help to combat emissions and climate change, you know, you better get ready for a twivalanche.
A twivalanche?
Yeah, an avalanche of tweets. most of them negative. It's my latest attempt to invent a buzzword.
Right, okay.
Last week, I tried out Quavers-Freude, which is that feeling of pleasure you get when a friend asks you for a crisp, a potato chip, and you tell them that, no, they're all gone. It's actually a very British reference. It's our national motto, for Queen, country, and crisps.
Is there some clever device you're going to use to get crisp to plastics?
Yes, I get you to ask me that question. plastic crystals are not a new technology. We've had them for decades. So you find them in paints, cosmetics, and of course, in all manner of plastic products. Mm-hmm. And they've been looked at by many people over the years as a way to store energy. But Bing Li, a researcher at the Chinese Academy of Science Institute of Metal Research, why do we get these titles? has been looking at ways in which they could actually be used to cool refrigeration equipment.
Why is there always an air conditioning story when we do these happy science shows?
Okay, regular listeners to the show know that I don't like the heat. I'm always looking at ways to cool down and technologies that make refrigeration more efficient and effective. And there's a huge irony there because as the world heats, the more we need air conditioners and refrigerators that are able to operate in higher temperatures. And those devices themselves contribute significantly to that spiral of warming. So that's actually a link that we have to break.
And plastic crystals may be one of those ways that we can break that link?
Well, Bing Li is betting on it. So apparently these crystals have what is known as a disordered structure. So they don't have that regular pattern that we often see in material science. So when you see things on the news and you see the structure of cells and things, it's often a kind of regular crystalline structure. One of the properties of this structure is that small amounts of pressure actually can switch them between those ordered and disordered states. Mm. And that leads to these really enormous transfers of energy, which is why they were looked at as storage devices. but they can also be used very effectively as refrigerants. Mm. Those massive changes make them much more effective and efficient than our current compressor-based refrigeration systems.
There you have it. I can't believe it. Plastic saving the world. I can only assume that you're going to save dolphins by spraying them with crude oil next.
Doubter. they shall know ye by the marks upon your skin. No, weirdly, it feels like today's show is being sponsored by China.
Yes.
But there is such amazing science and technology coming out of the country right now, which is something that it's easy to overlook if you're concentrating on stories about national governments and certain tech companies and infrastructure projects. So medical researchers at Zhejiang University are developing a glue that can be used to repair internal injuries and will simply dissolve into the body over time.
Wow.
So, yeah, exactly. So for people who are having transplants or who have traumatic injuries where you have to open up the body and go into the cavity, you no longer need to use any stitches. The article didn't go into kind of all of those details. So some of this is conjecture. But because the glue stops bleeding in about 30 seconds, I'm imagining it's going to become a tool used by surgeons in case of, you know, gunshots, all kinds of traumatic injuries.
So you just squirt it with a glue gun?
Well, I think it's a bit less kind of work boots and hard hat than that. You don't just wander in with the gun. It's made from a mixture of polymers and water, and it's actually activated by ultraviolet light. So you coat the area that is bleeding, you shine a UV light on it, and then it mimics the proteins and clotting agents that the body uses naturally to close wounds. At the moment, I think it's been formulated to work with the proteins formed by animals like pigs and rats. So I don't think it's something that we're going to be seeing used on humans in the immediate future, but I imagine it won't be too long until the advice to get a little more sunlight isn't just an old wives' tale.
All right, moving along, give us an app.
Okay, I'm going to stick with health. Now, if this thing gets approved by the US FDA, you may soon be able to diagnose ear infections in young children using nothing more than an app, your smartphone, and a piece of paper.
You know, this sounds like it's one of your get-rich-quick schemes.
I know. There are so many businessmen out there who think like me. It's really heartwarming. Apparently, kids get loads of ear infections. I don't know why, because I don't have any kids. I'm guessing it's probably carelessness. Having seen my own nieces and nephews in that situation, I do know that it causes a great deal of distress, especially when the child struggles to explain to a parent what's really wrong with them.
So how does it work?
Well, the app was developed by a guy called Justin Chan at the University of Seattle, and it emits a soft chirping sound. See, this even links back to my Twivalanche. And the app analyzes the wave that are reflected from those sounds, because the infections often cause a buildup of fluid. So the sounds that would normally reach the eardrum and cause it to vibrate are reflected back. So those reflections and the speed of those reflections can indicate whether a fluid buildup is present and there could be an infection.
And where does the paper come in?
You turn it into a little funnel that goes into the child's ear, and your phone speakers send out those little chirps, those little pulses. I know, it's really cool. It's a mixture of, you know, fantastically high-tech and really low-grade analog, a bit like this show. So far, the app has been tested on a bunch of children between the ages of 18 months and 17 years old.
I thought you said that the child might not be able to explain what's wrong.
Well, exactly. I mean, the 18-month-old kid will probably be fairly lucid, while the 17-year-old is likely to be functionally monosyllabic. So you're going to need all the help you can get. But so far, the accuracy has been around 85%. And of course, this is not about a definitive diagnosis. It's about making those decisions whether someone needs further medical care. And in countries where healthcare is expensive, it can also maybe help you to avoid the costly experience of an unnecessary visit to the clinic.
There you go. Matt Armitage, a man who can never spend too little on a child.
That's a little bit unfair. but as I have no evidence to debunk it with, I'm going to deflect it with some space stories.
All right.
We're back to China again, or at least the moon via China. China's U-22 moon rover, a name which had both of us stumbling last time we mentioned it, The U22 has spotted rocks that may have been punched through the surface crust of the moon. It's hoped that this may give us information about the early magma ocean that formed on the satellite's surface and give us some information about what the mantle of the moon is actually constructed from. So this is actually the first time that we get to see anything below the surface to this extent. And it does seem to be quite different from Earth's own mantle, something that may have been caused by the presence of water on Earth, making the big changes to our planet. Scientists are also hoping that it will be a useful comparison point, not just with our planet, but with others as well, because it allows us to use the moon as a base point. For other planets that started with magma oceans, we can track how they, unlike the moon, have evolved in the billions of years since then. Do you want to finish with a food-related story?
Only if it's not some frightening, grown in a laboratory or made out of a plastic story.
No, it's a story about donuts and black holes.
All right.
Perfect. As we mentioned before, you were lucky enough to be present when the photos of a black hole were unveiled to the media in the US a few weeks ago. Back in April, we had more black hole photos, this time from V404 Cygni, which is 7,800 light years away from us. Apparently, it's a bit of a lonely system. Mm. It's a binary system that consists of just a black hole and a star. And obviously, the black hole is a bit like Homer Simpson because he's eating the star like a donut. Right now, the black hole is sucking gases from that star at a phenomenal rate. I guess it's a little like when you're blowing up a balloon and you let the air come back into your lungs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, suddenly your lungs and your stomach just puff up. It's a bit of a shock. So what the black hole is doing is taking material from the star so fast that it's actually swelling up in the middle. Normally, black holes would be fat, and astronomers have likened this shape to a donut. But what really strikes me about this story is that we're actually watching all of this happening.
In terms of technology?
Yeah, like we said, you know, at the start of last few weeks, we've been talking about distortion and the power of companies over individuals. So, you know, today I wanted to demonstrate some of that huge volume of stories about individuals and companies that are doing incredible things to improve our lives. And you don't actually have to look very hard for the stories. Most of these came from the New Scientist website, and they're actually all from the last 4 or 5 weeks. And I think we've featured something like 8 or 9 stories today, and I could easily have done 3 times that amount just from within this same time period. Mm. So if the news or social media is getting you down, then change the news or social media that you're reading or watching, because we are living in an incredible time, even if it doesn't always feel like it.
You know, it's a show about innovation. The only thing I learn is Twivalanche.
Well, as long as you retain that, I mean, as long as my name gets attached to Twivalanche or Quaversfreuder, I am perfectly happy.
There you go. You can find out the transcripts of the show at culturepop.com. It's culture with a K. And of course, you can get the podcast. It's available on the BFM app and Spotify as well. We'll be right back with Geek Squawks after this. BFM 89.9.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.